At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
With over 25 years of expertise, DAFGiving 360's donor-advised funds can help you get a tax deduction and potentially grow your charitable dollars tax-free while you recommend when and where to give. Learn more at DAFGiving360.org.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With AllTrails, you can discover nature's best with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Now, Fred, you know you can't say something like that, like right before the show starts, and then Sue and I are going to be in suspense. Like seconds ago, he says, "I have to tell you about my latest." Oh no! And then he stopped himself. Sue,
yeah,
you can't do that. If this is airworthy material,
it's a car story.
Okay, well, we're going to have to hear it right now because I've made the executive decision that we're hearing it right now. It's too much suspense. It's too much suspense for Joyce, who might be listening, and anyone else who might be listening this afternoon.
What happened, Fred?
So this morning, my wife took her car into the dealer to get some recall notices done on it.
Okay.
And so they got it up to speed, and they called her and said, "Your car's ready to be picked up. Oh, by the way, we crashed it. We bumped into it."
No way.
Yeah. Oh,
seriously.
She's on her way over there now to, they said, "We think we can buff it out." But
Come look. Famous last words.
Yeah. What did they crash it into?
I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, so my gosh.
That's breaking news.
Oh, I would raise hell.
Bottom or Dilch hospital.
Yeah, I would absolutely raise hell and see what you can do about that. Because
wow.
That's not
that's
too
so,
good.
I feel bad for
that's
everybody
the second
involved.
Time that's happened to me.
At a dealership?
Second?
At a different dealership, yeah.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
Fred.
The first, you remember when Saturns first came out and they had all these sort of parties for people when they buy them? They had this big dealership party.
Oh,
and we all showed up and brought our cars.
Oh, wow.
And we had food. And while we were eating and drinking the Kool-Aid, they would run our cars through the car wash connected to the dealership. And they just scratched up the entire side of the car. When
Fred.
They did that. But that was years ago.
Okay, yeah. Just curious. What did they do? Did they?
They said, "We can buff it out or we can give you a new one." And I said, "How about a new one?"
Wait, give you a new what? Sure. Give you a whole new car?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Buff it out. Are you kidding me?
That was years ago, though.
But in this case, I wouldn't.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't know what this one is.
Hashtag buff it out.
What
I'd say, no, I'm not going for that deal.
Buy a car, too.
Man,
it didn't work for
Saturn.
So that's
it. Fred's back to the news. Back
Fred's
to the
got a lot
stuff.
Of stuff going on. He had his wife had the flat tire and crashed yesterday. Yeah. I think basically all of this is focused and oriented around Marie, though, right?
You
just have to come in for the rescue.
Although, I never told you the other part.
Oh,
I actually had my windshield repaired, replaced at work a couple days ago.
Love it.
They came downtown and gave me a whole new windshield.
That's great.
If my daughter was here right now, she would go, "Safe Flight Replay."
Safe Flight Repair.
Okay, I got it wrong, but I'm telling you, the way that the marketing hits these young kids, I'm completely convinced, and I've said this before, with the, you know, whether it's the Progressive commercials or some of the insurance commercials, those aren't for those of us who have had insurance for decades and were with State Farm or Allstate or whatever. Those are for kids. So when they get 18 or 21 or whenever they're going to handle their own insurance, it's the cool company that they're going with. I'm completely convinced of that.
Listen, if you have a good jingle and it gets in people's heads, you're ahead of the game.
You are. And if you're Cracker Barrel, you're behind the game, I guess, at this point.
Also true.
I want to see the numbers from Cracker Barrel, and you know what happens with the you know, the crowd. Do people avoid this? Now, here's something interesting, and we did this. When was Asra on yesterday, Fred? Was she on in the first hour?
Yes.
Okay. Well, so if you were listening to us in the first hour, you may have noticed that Asra Nomani, who's a regular guest on the show, had written this piece. It was fantastic, and this was before they backed off on the rebrand. But one of the things, and the reason I bring this up is because there's a piece that's in the Wall Street Journal today that is not unlike this total narrative that she seized on. So what happened was, and I noticed this right away, were you in here when we were talking about this? As soon as this all happened with Cracker Barrel last week, the official account for Steak and Shake.
Yeah, that was
very aggressive. Like, really, really aggressive. I'm like, what in the world is going on with Steak and Shake making a big deal? And they didn't stop. You know, they kept going, and they went through the rebrand of the rebrand. Can we just call it that when they backed up? So this is the Wall Street Journal this morning along those lines. For activist investor Sardar Biglari, Cracker Barrel's about face on the logo change isn't enough. Biglari, the chief executive of Steak and Shake and owner of an investment firm that is a shareholder in Cracker Barrel, has spent years swiping at the country-themed restaurant chain, waging unsuccessful proxy fights over more than a decade. The removal of the, quote, old-timer, the man on the restaurant's logo since 1977, proved an irresistible opening to agitate against the Tennessee chain. And that, in fact, he did. He really did. He and they give him credit here for fueling a lot of the social media outrage against Cracker Barrel and Julie Fels Masino, who is the CEO, at least for now. So I don't know. The guy who operates Steak and Shake is quoted, Dan Edwards, says, look, it pays to be authentic. And that's one of the things that they were trying to focus on. Biglari is not doing any interviews. I think he's done enough online. Which was fascinating. All right, well, I'm trying to avoid some of the obvious here today because we have updates on this shooting from Minnesota. We also have a situation where, like, the New York Times has a headline about her and she doing the shooting. Jesse Waters did a great monologue last night on, it's really a he. We know that this was, I mean, I don't even think there's a debate about this anymore. This is definitely a trans shooter. Here's something that's interesting, though, and I don't know what to make of this. I don't know what to make of a lot of these things that happen with these mass shootings. Let's see if I pulled this up because I took a screen capture of this. Apparently, did you see this, by the way, and I don't know if they talked about this a lot. You know, some of the manifesto was in a different language. Did you notice that?
No.
Yeah, it was, when I first saw this manifesto yesterday, I don't know if it was in Russian or another Eastern European language, but it wasn't all in English. So what? There's one website out there that says the decoded manifesto of the Minneapolis school shooter reveals that he was, quote, tired of being trans and wished that he never brainwashed himself. That's pretty on target there.
Whoa.
I can't cut my hair now as it would be embarrassing defeat. I will probably chop it on the day of the attack. And I don't know if that happened at all. But here's the update. The chief of Minneapolis police just had a news conference about an hour ago with the very latest on all this.
What we have seen so far is this is an individual who, unfortunately, like so many other mass shooters that we have seen in this country too often and around the world, had some deranged fascination with previous mass shootings and very disturbing writings that demonstrate hatred towards many different individuals and different groups of people. And he fantasized about the plans of other mass shooters. Unfortunately, again, this has become all too common in our society.
Yeah, you know, when I was kind of describing this whole thing yesterday with the video that came out, which is really, really creepy. I know that YouTube pulled it down, but it's still out there and people have shared it on Twitter. But he's just laughing in a very sinister way, speaking underneath his breath a little bit and showing off the weaponry that he was going to use in the attack. And it had all kinds of names that were either on the, you know, the shaft of the gun, the cartridges, all kinds of ways. And some of those names on there, it was random. There was anti-Jewish stuff on there. There was anti-Trump stuff. There was anti-everything. I mean, he hated, and this is one of the things I get into here in this news conference, it's not just like he was focused on one group. He pretty much hated everyone. But there was, remember I said this yesterday, there was a name of someone who had done something similar in Madison, Wisconsin. Now, I'm particularly careful. I'm being careful today because I've said this for years, and I love the fact that it's catching on that we should not be using the name of this shooter.
We know ultimately the purpose of the shooter's actions was to obtain notoriety for the shooter themselves. That being said, I have only said the name of this shooter once, and I'm asking members of the media to stop saying the shooter's name. That was the whole purpose of why he did this heinous act, to obtain that notoriety for themselves.
Okay, but the one thing you can't do, if you're not going to say the shooter's name, you better damn well get the pronouns right, right, Jake Tapper?
A piece of the puzzle as to who the shooter was. The Minneapolis Star Tribune says, according to court records, because there's been some confusion about what the shooter's name was.
Yes.
That Robin Westman's mother applied to change her child's name in 2019. It was, at one point, Robert Paul Westman.
Correct.
But since she identifies as a female and wants her name to reflect that identification, was underage, it's now Robin.
Okay, well, maybe it's not, because I'm not going to call him by either name. A couple of things that came out today is that the church doors, this mass began, and the church doors were locked from the inside because they were supposed to be. Every time, Fred, I guess they right. started mass, they would lock the doors. The chief talked about that a little bit today. I mean, that I think saved a lot of lives.
Chief, could you talk about, we're hearing some new details come out about the moments inside the church.
Yes.
About the doors being locked and how that yes. might have protected some of the kids. Could you talk to us about that?
So the question was about the doors being locked at the church. Annunciation Church had a practice that once mass began, they locked the doors of the church. This incident occurred shortly after the mass was beginning. So there's no question that the fact that doors were locked likely saved additional lives. At the same time, we also know that the shooter intended to barricade and did barricade the doors on the same side of the church where the shooting occurred. What's particularly heinous and cowardly about this is these children were slaughtered by a shooter who could not see them. He was standing outside of the building, firing through very narrow church windows on the level where they would line up with the pews.
Now, we did get confirmation that the shooter did attend this school at one point and had attended mass there. His mother worked at the school as well. There were questions about the guns that were, I think, purchased legally.
How was he able to obtain a weapon of that magnitude?
So the question was, due to previous social media posts, why was the individual able to obtain a weapon? We have nothing in the evidence that we have acquired so far that would indicate that he is a person that he did not lawfully purchase these weapons. He did not have a criminal history. The only thing that we are aware of is a traffic ticket. He did not have any state-ordered commitments for mental health. So of everything that we have seen so far, it did not rise to the level where he would have been a person prohibited from purchasing a firearm.
Well, this dude was messed up. There's no doubt. When I read from some of the manifesto yesterday, look, and I'm not, don't misinterpret what I'm about to say here, because this was definitely full of hate, and he was full of hate. But then he ends his whole deal. Remember, I was talking about this with, you know, I love you, talking about his family and giving advice
yeah.
to his sister.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just said that he was tortured by some of this and he had to go out his own way. I think the question is, well, do you have to do it by killing, you know, children? And that's what they made clear today, that he wanted to see, this was part of his whole goal, he wanted to see children suffer. The question about Trump, was Trump a target?
Ash Patel put out some details today, including that there was a threat against President Trump.
That there is no question in this case that this shooter intended to terrorize the children, the school members of the school community, the parishioners were inside of that church. So whatever label we want to put on it is almost regardless of the fact that it is very clear that this shooter had the intention to terrorize those innocent children.
That's awful. And then one more soundbite here from Joe Thompson. He is the assistant, I guess he's the acting DA, they say, in Minneapolis.
The shooter left behind hundreds of pages of writings that describe the shooter's plan, writings that describe the shooter's mental state, and more than anything, writings that describe the shooter's hate. pure, indiscriminate hate. The shooter expressed hate towards almost every group imaginable. The shooter expressed hate towards black people. The shooter expressed hate towards Mexican people. The shooter expressed hate towards Christian people. The shooter expressed hate towards Jewish people. In short, the shooter appeared to hate all of us. The shooter's heart was full of hate.
Yeah, the shooter was messed up beyond messed up, really, really. And the whole thing, and again, I'm still shocked in a very positive way that more people weren't killed. And there are some people that are in still serious condition at the hospital. But, you know, that 10-year-old kid that we had the soundbite of yesterday, he talks about how, and they were talking about some of this today, that I think he was in fifth grade, right? They said,
yeah, he was 10.
Is it fifth, sixth, seventh? Is that the middle school? Because there were, I thought maybe eighth graders were an eighth grader. My daughter has this now in fifth grade. She's got like a buddy from an earlier grade that they kind of pair them with. And apparently one of the eighth grade kids just like climbed on top of these younger kids. Some of the older kids were on top of them, you know, instinctively trying to protect them, which I think is an amazing part of the story. Okay, John Levine's going to join us from the Washington Free Beacon, and he's got some things to say about the Minneapolis shooter and some other topics. John Lott, who is great on crime numbers. We already kind of thought about John because of D.C. and some of these other things happening in Chicago, but he's got some interesting numbers on the trans angle of this shooting, and that's coming up as well. Well, 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 we are approaching the weekend very quickly, and bonus round, it's a holiday weekend. Woo! We will have a best of show on Monday. That will be nice. I mean, good Lord, I need the time off, Sue. I've barely been off at all this summer, so I can't wait for the day off.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably true.
There was some panic because I originally had last Thursday and Friday on the vacation day list because I was going to go out to Vegas. Now, I had canceled that trip earlier in the summer, but Trisha had texted me, goes, hey, do you still need those days? I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that to you. I've taken enough time off. Yeah, there you go. I'm committed to working here for a little while. We'll have Sue's news in the next hour, but tomorrow we have a roundtable. Jane will be here. Steve Butts, State Representative, GOP consultant David Barklage. Our sheriff is in the news again. Did you see that?
Oh, my gosh. Did he get indicted?
Well, he got indicted, but then he also, Andrew Bailey's office had to drop the nepotism charge because they actually did a DNA test, and he's not related to the dude. So he dropped that, but then, hey, good news. Oh, yeah, but he got indicted. It's weird, though. I'll get into it later. Okay. It's like a misdemeanor charge, so I don't know. Mm. I mean, the main goal here is getting this guy. He's a clown show, right? Getting him out of office. John Levine is back with us this afternoon. John is the reporter for the Washington Free Beacon. How are you, John? Welcome back to the show.
I'm great. Great to be back. This is my first time back as a Washington Free Beacon reporter.
Well, that may have confused me just a little bit because I saw you on Fox yesterday and I thought that the title might have been a little different. So there was a job change?
Yeah, you know, there's a new sheriff in town in D.C. and I just felt it was the right time to come down here, and things happened. You know, things happen in life. And here I am now at the Washington Free Beacon, and I love it, and everyone's great. And what we did in New York City, we're going to do here.
Awesome.
And a lot of people are in big trouble.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on that. That sounds awesome. And I want to ask you about some of the things happening in D.C. You know, it was interesting, too. I saw this story, I think it was Sunday or Monday, about Fire Aid in the L.A. Times. And I know that that was one of the reasons you were talking about it on Fox. But let me get your reaction just to what happened in Minneapolis and the shooting and the reaction in Washington today. John, any thoughts on how this is all kind of unfolding in this second day of trying to figure out what the hell happened up there?
It's just a very terrible tragedy. Obviously, we still don't know everything or even most things, but what we do know is very disturbing. And this was a second incident of where a transgender identified shooter shot up a religious institution and unfortunately killed several people, in this case, children praying in the pews during mass during a church. I mean, it can't get more awful than that. And I don't know what the future holds, but hopefully we can sort of begin to precipitate some kind of conversation about, you know, the violent, you know, tendencies, because we're, you know, we're taking these kids who are saying that they're born in the wrong body, they have gender dysphoria, and we're just shoving them full of hormones. We're giving them all these very, very powerful drugs at young ages. And look, if you shove someone full of hormones, it creates aggression as a very common side effect. And you have already people who are kind of mentally unstable to begin with. And it's potentially a very toxic, lethal cocktail and very volatile. And I don't know. I hope we can sort of begin to have a conversation about what are we doing.
Yeah, and we should
have. How did we get to this place?
Part of that conversation happened here and originated in St. Louis with Jamie Reed, who was the whistleblower, and that, you know, was something that brought down the so-called gender-affirming care clinic at Washington University and Children's Hospital. But what really jumps from that whole episode to me, because when she first wrote about this, and then, you know, I interviewed Jamie several times, the concern that she had was very specific to mental illness, telling the doctors and the people that were leading that clinic, hey, look, you are automatically just hopping people up on these puberty blockers and other drugs, and you're completely ignoring the fact that these are kids that are messed up, like severely mentally ill.
Right. Right. And you have a lot of kids who need, you know, counseling or maybe very different kinds of drugs, but certainly not, you know, these very high powered hormones or other things that they're getting. And it's you know, because I'm a reporter, I always see the market motive. I always see the profit motive. And you have, you know, a drug like Lupron, for example. This was for stage 4 prostate cancer. And now it's being used as a puberty blocker, which creates an enormous new market share for it. And I see too many people making too much money on the gender-affirming care industry for me not to be suspicious.
Absolutely.
And, you know, these are, we haven't yet reckoned with the tragic consequences and side effects. I mean, you know, there's an ocean of people who they wake up one day and they're 30 years old and it's like, oh my God, what have I done with myself? I'm mutilated.
Yeah, but
why
you don't.
Someone stop me.
You don't read about that. You know, I pointed to this Washington Post story from a couple of weeks ago that talked about this family that owned a bookstore. I think it was in North Dakota, South Dakota, something like that. And they're being run out of their state because of a bathroom bill because of their trans child. So the Washington Post and the other legacy media, they love to prop up those stories. They never tell the other side of the story of the detransitioners and the people that feel like they were, nope, you know, abused and mutilated. That story never gets into the legacy media, only the other side.
No, they do not. And it's very, very sad because, you know, these are irreversible changes that people undertake to themselves. And, you know, if you have a kid that says, okay, well, I'm gay, that's whatever, because, you know, maybe you are, maybe you aren't. This doesn't really involve, you don't have to do anything. But if you say you're transgender, that puts you on a sort of roadmap, a treadmill, if you will, of services that, you know, from surgeries to hormones to various other things that can be life-altering forever. There is no going back. So the bar for, like, are we going to go along with this has to be very, very high because the results are irreversible.
Yep. Chris Elston, Billboard Chris, has been very, very vocal about that, and it's a very, very important point. All right, I'm going to run out of time, and that's my fault, but you have to talk about this fire aid thing in L.A., because as I mentioned, I saw this in the L.A. Times. So $100 million is raised from this thing. I remember watching the concert, playing some of the highlights here on the show. But where did the money go, John? That's one of the questions right now, correct?
Well, I think a lot of your audience probably won't be surprised to know that the 160 California nonprofits that Fire Aid has given the money to have not always spent it in the most judicious way possible. And I'm, you know, it didn't take crazy amounts of sleuthing. All I did was go on the Fire Aid website and look up the individual organization. So right off the bat, and they list them all there. So right off the bat, you have several that are openly racially exclusionary. They say if you're not Black or Latino, you cannot apply for grants from our organization.
Right. You highlight something called the Green Line Housing Foundation, and it got $4.8 million from a pool dedicated to health and housing, and it notes right away no whites need apply, right?
Right. I mean, it doesn't frame it in the negative. It says only Black and Brown can apply. So, but the negative is obvious. Well, if only Black and Brown can apply, we know who's not allowed to apply. There was also the Black Freedom Fund. There was at least three different groups dedicated to servicing illegal aliens, which, again, like, these are people who are criminals, frankly, who are in our country. They broke the law, and they're receiving fire aid funds, and they should be, you know, getting an ice wagon instead. There was at least 10 different groups dedicated to mental health, which, God bless them, important, but not really not going to build your house back.
My favorite is the California Native Vote Project. Explain that.
The Native Vote. Yeah. Get out the vote for Native Americans. How many Native Americans are in the Palisades anyway, by the way?
I don't know. That was stolen land, though, I'm guessing, at one point.
Yeah, right.
Right?
You didn't start with a land acknowledgement. Shame on you. And it's all, I mean, and I don't want to say it was all down the toilet. There were a lot of very legitimate charities on there that got money, and I'm like, okay, that makes sense. This makes sense. But there was a lot that didn't. And we all, look, California spends billions of dollars on the homeless nonprofit industrial complex. And you go there, and it's like we lost a war. There's tent cities everywhere. You're like, is this America? And where does the billion that we spend on this go? And it goes to salaries, it goes to overhead, and it goes to galas. Nonprofits love having big parties.
And by the way, I have to correct you, John, and I know that you will apologize profusely here, but it's the unhoused, okay? It's the unhoused.
I'm so sorry.
Step up your game now that you're at the Washington Free Beacon. Yes, exactly.
We both have to be better.
Great reporting. Congrats on the new gig. I really appreciate it. We'll have you back soon.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
With over 25 years of expertise, DAFGiving 360's donor advised funds can help you get a tax deduction and potentially grow your charitable dollars tax-free while you recommend when and where to give. Learn more at DAFGiving360.org.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover nature's best with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
Big moments or small moments, they all deserve great style. At Marisa's, we're here to help you show up feeling your best, no matter what's on your calendar. Whether it's a date night, a special event, or just another Tuesday, our over 800 stylists are here to help. From tried and true denim to head-turning looks, we've got style that fits your life and your budget. Visit your local Maurice's to find fashion fit for you with a little help from us.
Yes.
All right,
yes,
take
anytime.
Care. We'll see you. Got Sue's News for a Thursday on a beautiful, beautiful afternoon in St. Louis. Should be beautiful tonight, by the way, at the Muni for Diana Ross and John Batiste. We'll have, as I mentioned, a Reardon Roundtable tomorrow. Jane will be on the panel. State Rep. Steve Butts, who's a veteran, and David Barklage, GOP consultant. Frank Cusimano in the 4 o'clock hour, of course. All the regular stuff. Paul Hall with entertainment. Tim Summer talking music in the 5 p.m. hour tomorrow. John Lott is back with us. He's the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. He's always great on the crime issue and guns in particular. John, how are you? Welcome back. Hope all is well.
Oh, thanks for having me on. It's great to talk to you again.
I want to talk about D.C. and Chicago and, unfortunately, like St. Louis, where we have bad crime as well. But you dug into the numbers here a little bit. In the aftermath of this shooting, now it's all about gun control again. But there's also this trans angle that the legacy media really wants to ignore. And I saw at least one graph that you had put out there that addressed the issue of how many trans shooters we've actually had in this country in more recent history. Didn't you come up with something right along those lines that were kind of revealing?
Right. Well, I mean, if you kind of adjust for their share of the population. The surveys indicate that it's something about 0.75% of the population identifies as trans, and you compare them to their share of the mass public shooters. They're about seven times their share of mass public shooters is about seven times their share of the population. So that's concerning, you know, that it's so that they're so overrepresented. Now, look, to me, it's not super surprising, because one thing that you see with these mass public shooters over and over and over again is that you have people who are suicidal. You have people who want to end their life. We've always had people who wanted to end their lives. But at some point along the line, people realize that by going and killing lots of other people, they could go and get attention. So what you find for these mass murderers is that a couple things. One is they're suicidal to begin with, but two, they feel unappreciated. And so you have these trans individuals, you read their diaries and manifestos that they have, that they've left behind. They're filled with things that society is trying to kill the trans people there and things like that. So I guess there's also the additional thing that's different than a lot of these mass murderers, and that they think that they're, somehow being vindicated because they're fighting back for trans being killed. I'm not sure what trans are. They never are specific about which trans individuals are being killed. But in any case, but I have to say, the one thing that just kind of, it keeps striking me about these mass murders, and I know you and I have talked about it before, is how explicit they talk. Explicitly, they explain why they pick the targets they do. But you will look in vain through any of the media coverage on this to find even one story with the explanation that the killer gives. So if you read his manifesto, if I can just quote to you, he says, "I recently heard a rumor that James Holmes, the Aurora theater shooter, may have chosen venues that were, quote, gun-free zones, end quote. I would probably aim the same way. Holmes wanted to make sure his victims would be unarmed. That's why I and many others like school so much. At least for me, I am focused on them." Adam Lanza, who, by the way, did the Sandy Hook killing, is my reason. You know, and the thing is, what amazes me is the media goes and makes it clear that they've read his manifesto. CNN has a long discussion about his, quote, obsession with school shootings. The Washington Post describes the manifesto's, quote, reverence for other mass shooters. You have similar things in the Times and many other places, international outlets. And yet somehow none of them, not once, will go and mention that, well, you know, his obsession with school shootings was that what he had learned from them was that you had to pick places that where victims weren't able to go and defend themselves, that were gun-free zones. And that's the reason why he was focusing on schools. I don't know how much more explicit they can make it, but it's not just him. You know, you look at the Nashville school shooter, again, exactly the same thing. You look at the Buffalo supermarket attacker there. He talks about, you know, good areas where CC permits are outlawed may be good areas of attack. You know, it just and he picks that type of place. On our website, we have literally dozens of similar statements by these killers where, but yet you will not find one news story anyplace where they go and have quotes from these guys about why they picked them. Now, my guess is if they even had sometimes they say, okay, we had another mass murderer who picked a target where he knew his victims would be defenseless, that they were disarmed. And at some point, I think that'd have a big impact on the gun control debate. And the other thing is, isn't it newsworthy to know why these guys keep on picking the targets that they do? What possibly, you're in the news business. I can't for the life of me
figure out why the media refuses to talk at all, even mention once anybody, not Fox, not the New York Times, not the Washington Post, not ABC, NBC, CBS, NBC, none of these guys will mention this. And, I used to try to talk to news editors. I'd say, you know, when you have one of these attacks, why don't you mention that the attack occurred in a gun-free zone right. place? And they say, well, if you can get me the information within, like, the news cycle, you know, like within a couple hours after it occurring, then they would do it. And so I made a huge effort, and I got that information to them. And then they still wouldn't use it. And I'd ask them why, and they said, well, John, you have to understand, it would just be political if we were to include that in the story. I said, why is it any more political to say we've had yet another mass public shooting in a place where guns are banned than it is to go and talk about what type of gun, you know, you call it an assault weapon, or to go and have something else in there, like how you think the person obtained the gun. Facts, by the way, that frequently the initial news reports turn out to be wrong, okay? And yet they have no problem with that. I don't know why.
These are valid questions. These are great questions. And, I think it's just because it's easier for them to go right to the gun control debate than it is to dig into any of the other stuff.
Well, why isn't this part of the gun control debate?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why isn't whether or not you have a gun-free zone? That seems like a gun control issue, isn't it?
It is. I'm with you. I don't, you know, and I don't know why that doesn't manifest itself more often. It's a great question. Let's, John Lott is here. He's the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. A lot of focus, obviously, the last couple of weeks on D.C. I was shocked yesterday. I had a soundbite from Muriel Bowser, the mayor of D.C., almost praising the National Guard for coming in, reducing the amount of carjackings. When it comes to the, you know, the crime in D.C. and the murder rate in particular, you say, look, the murder rate in D.C. is about 500% higher than the average state, John?
It's if you look at the 2024 data, the 2023 data was like 500%. For the 2024 data, it was 434% higher than the average state. You know, Democrats want to make D.C. a state. So, I mean, I can compare it to other cities. If you look at the 25 largest cities, most populous cities in the United States, of which D.C. is one of those, what you find is that it has the highest murder rate of any of the 25 largest cities. In fact, it's much higher. It's like 28% higher than the number two city. And if you want to compare it to states, because they want to make it a state, it's 169% higher murder rate in 2024 than the highest state. It's like, and as we just said, it's 434% higher than the average state. So, you know, these are pretty incredible numbers. And that's even just accepting those numbers for where they are, because there's a lot of
manipulation,
from the police, that they've been fudging the data that's there. And so, you know, it could even be much worse. But, you know, you look, we just had it 13 days in a row without a homicide in D.C. If you take the average daily rate of homicides in 2024 in D.C., the odds that you could get 13 days in a row is 1 in 800. You have one chance in 800 tries to get 13 days in a row. And, you know, that's pretty unlikely that you're going to have that. And they had one homicide on the 14th, but we've now had a couple days going back to zero homicides. So it just, you know, it's not just that. As you were mentioning, the mayor was saying in the first 20 days that they've had this, they have carjackings are down 87%.
Way down from last year, right? And she even pointed out that most of those are, you know, conducted with a weapon, right? So that's an important aspect to that, too. So do you think that some of this, because obviously what Trump's doing in D.C. is legal, if he tries to do something like that in Chicago or elsewhere, do you think it flies?
Well, I mean, he can go and put in National Guard people, but their effectiveness and what they're able to do would be tremendously reduced. Look, there are lots of differences with D.C. One is, governors can go and give National Guard troops essentially police powers. They can go and arrest people, but it requires the governor to do that. In D.C., the president is effectively the governor there. So he can go and give Trump can go and give the National Guard the power to go and arrest criminals that they see and pick them up for crimes. Pritzker is not going to allow him to do that in Illinois. Pritzker is not going to give his approval for that. And so there are real limits on what he's going to be able to do to help out. I hope what happens is people see, look, this isn't rocket science. We have more people on the street to go and arrest criminals, and crime plummets. So, you know, D.C., before all this, had 1,300 patrol officers for the district. But that means you're not going to have at most 400 or so on duty at any point in time. Because not everybody's around to be on duty. You have some people who are injured and some people who are on vacation and other things. Having 400 people do all sorts of different types of tasks for a district that has 720,000 people is asking a lot. And it's understandable why the police unions say that they've been stretched
absolutely
into the breaking
point. On a different scale, it's happened here, you know, in St. Louis as well. Some of the numbers of how many patrol cars are actually out in our downtown area in certain districts between, you know, the early evening hours and the early morning, it's actually staggering how low it is, and the criminals are pretty aware of this. John Lott, always great to have you on. I appreciate the work on all this, and we'll get you back soon. You have a great holiday weekend. You know, yesterday I talked about those Oreos with Reese's, Sue.
Oh, yeah.
Several reports from listeners to say, and I don't know why it is, but Dierbergs being cited as where they not only have them, but they have them on display.
Huh.
So it was kind of my goal to get some of these before tomorrow, right? Can you remind me?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to forget.
No,
you know that. Like, I have things on my calendar.
Could just text Jane right now and take care of it.
Why don't you do that? That would be easier. Say, Jane, go get some Oreo peanut butter cookies because we want to try them tomorrow. I think that would be good. I mentioned this a little bit earlier in the hour. So you have two stories about Alfred Montgomery in the news this afternoon. He's the sheriff of St. Louis, and he's been controversial, a very controversial figure. One of the charges from Andrew Bailey, the outgoing attorney general who's heading to, you know, D.C. to work with Cash Patel and Dan Bongino at the FBI, becoming co-deputy director, they had said that one of the issues was nepotism because they claimed there was a court filing that had relied on what they refer to as a high-ranking deputy in the sheriff's office claiming that he hired his half-brother. The problem is they did a DNA test and it proved that he was not a half-brother. They said that the deputy told them Montgomery himself had said that Malik Taylor, the deputy at the center of the allegation, was his relative, but then they see the new evidence from Montgomery's attorneys, and he's got like seven attorneys or something like that.
Oh my gosh.
And lobbyists and people like that. So they list Malik Taylor with the same birth date as the deputy named in the lawsuit, and they say that genetic testing showed that with 99.9999998% certainty that his father was Mac Donald Taylor. The father listed on the sheriff's birth certificate is Whitfield Montgomery. So you have that. They dropped the nepotism charge, and that was one of six claims against him by Andrew Bailey for, you know, his quo warranto to kind of get him out of office.
Right.
I don't know that that really affects it that much. But then you have this, the other story today. He gets a couple of headlines. The city's embattled sheriff, Alfred Montgomery, was indicted Thursday on a misdemeanor and civil rights charge stemming from his handcuffing of a jail official. You might remember this from earlier this year. He ordered his deputies to handcuff the deputy jail commissioner. Her name is Tammy Ross, because he was trying to, apparently there was this allegation that there was sexual misconduct. In fact, there was. In the end, they found out that there was, and the person that was involved with that was dealt with appropriately. But what the sheriff tried to do, because Ross did not want to give him the access to the detainee, is cuffed her in his office, and now she's,
good,
you know,
grief,
suing over that. So I guess he goes to the jail. He insists he wants to see the detainee. Ross refuses. He says that she's being held in contempt and orders a deputy to handcuff her and take her to his office. They point out in the story of the Post that his office, unlike other sheriffs across the state, does not run the jail or perform general law enforcement duties. You know, that's what's weird about this. The sheriff's office in St. Louis is to transport prisoners to and from court. They provide some courthouse security. They serve legal papers. So they're not the ones that are going to pull you over for, you know, well, nobody gets pulled over for expired tags, but you know what I mean. There's different responsibilities. So congrats to Sheriff Montgomery. He still has his job, and he's in the news twice today. One, for a federal indictment. It is a misdemeanor charge, so there's not a lot to that. He does have some bigger problems, I'd say.
Get more at 971talk.com.
What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself
in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
No matter why you give, your donations can do so much more with a donor-advised fund from DAF Giving 360. You can get a tax deduction upon funding an account, and your assets can potentially grow tax-free as you recommend when and where to give. It's a tax-smart way to maximize your charitable giving from a fund with over 25 years of expertise bringing donors, financial advisors, and charities together. Make a greater impact with DAF Giving 360. Learn more at dafgiving360.org.
Out here, we feel things. The sore calves that lead to epic views. The cool waterfall mist during a hot hike. And the breeze that hits just right at the summit. But hey, don't just listen to us. Experience it for yourself. All Trails makes it easy to discover the best of the outdoors. With more than 450,000 trails around the world, points of interest along the trail, and offline maps for always-on navigation. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's RADIO15 for 15% off today.
Your life isn't one size fits all. Every day brings something different. Your style should too. At Maurices, we make it easy to show up feeling comfortable, confident, and completely you. Our over 800 stylists are here to help you look your best. From tried-and-true denim to head-turning looks, we've got styles that fit your life and your budget. Fashion made for real-life moments. Maurices.
97.1 FM Talk. On-demand audio.
Two's News for a Thursday afternoon is coming up here in just a few minutes. Tomorrow afternoon, we'll do a Reardon Roundtable in the 3 o'clock hour with Jane Duker, State Rep Steve Butts, David Barklage, GOP consultant. Then we'll get into the 4 o'clock hour with Two's News, Paul Hall with some entertainment recommendations, Frank Cusimano talking a little baseball. I think the Cardinals won this afternoon, Fred,
didn't
they?
Yeah, 4-1.
So they split that series with the Pirates. So there you go. Not too bad. Tim Summer on some music stuff tomorrow. A little bit later this hour, Curtis Houck, who is managing editor of Newsbusters at the Media Research Center, will get into some of the media coverage of the last, you know, couple of weeks with D.C., but also from the aftermath of the shooting yesterday in Minneapolis. David Strom, by the way, is going to join us, I think, after the top of the hour at 5. He's been really doing some great work over at hotair.com on some of the stuff that is related to the trans issue, and he's up there in Minneapolis, so we'll have him after 5 o'clock. Our friend Mark Gelman from the Gelman team talking about some real estate issues in the 5:30 segment, and then audio cut of the day. A couple of things I wanted to mention, like I don't think any of us in this room, and Ethan's not here today, he's off, I don't think we're dedicated at this point viewers, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, of SNL, of Saturday Night Live.
No,
right?
No.
You know, I get to the point where sometimes I will watch the cold open and I just sit there and I shake my head. I'm like, you guys, it's not funny. You know?
Right.
And it's always against Trump. And mainly, I don't care. Like, I think there are things that you could mock with Trump or the administration. That's not something I would, you know, rule off the table. The problem is they literally had comedy gold in Joe Biden for 4 years.
Yes.
And Kamala Harris, you know, maybe you don't have Kamala Harris for 4 years because she's in the background, but you certainly had her for 6 months and you didn't do a damn thing with her.
Yep.
So it's just so disingenuous, and I don't understand what it's all about. The one thing I will tell you, though, is that they're making some shakeups at SNL. Now, these are not big names, but there's a guy by the name of Michael Longfellow who's been there for 3 years, and he had screen tested to take over Weekend Update. Now, I can't ever remember, like, did Michael Che or Colin Jost, did they leave or something?
No
like
idea.
Okay. So this guy apparently had tested to take over Weekend Update. I know some people, I think you like Colin Jost, don't you?
No.
That's Scarlett Johansson's husband. It's the only reason I like him is because he's married to her. But I never thought the, you know, Weekend Update thing, there were some funny things that they did, but, you know, it was inconsistently funny. So there's some other folks, and these are names that you're not going to, you know, even recognize. They were some of the, you know, the third-rate players that would be in bits that you'd never really know their names anyway. But that's how people sometimes begin to build their comedy resume on SNL. There was a veteran by the name of Celeste Yim, who is described as the show's first out trans writer, who was let go. Rosebud Baker, a stand-up comedian, said that she would not be returning after 3 seasons of writing on the show. Devin Walker, another cast member, said that the show is toxic as hell and said, to be clear, this is good news. It was just time for me to do something different. Please don't be hitting me with the I'm so sorry. We're not on that at all. So apparently they're happy that they're leaving. And then Heidi Gardner, who's become, I think, pretty popular, and she gets a lot of acting gigs. I think you would recognize Heidi.
I've got to go look her up.
She said that she was leaving the show, but it was not like some big official announcement, but I think that she's off SNL for sure. You know Heidi Gardner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She's pretty good. She's in a lot of different shows. So I wanted to touch on a couple of things that I found in the media that related to my situation with anxiety. I went on Monica Adams' podcast show. She does a daily show earlier this week. I have linked to that episode. I've gotten a lot of great feedback. People who watched it up on the YouTube or Twitter. I have it on my Twitter page, which is at Mark Reardon KFTK. But two things of note related not to me, but to that particular issue. So in the LA Times today, I see a story, and the headline is, "Have Anxiety, So Do These Comedians. Here are the strategies that help them cope." And the way the story is written is, if you don't have anxiety, stand-up comedian Aparna Nacharla riffs on stage. The way I would describe it is there's like an edgy improv group in your brain, and it just needs a one-word suggestion to spin like countless scenarios that no one's comfortable with. So there is a new documentary that's called Anxiety Club, which is on a streaming platform that's called Jolt. I have never heard of Jolt. There's too many screening platforms. And the other thing that's happening is, I mentioned this to somebody earlier today, and I'm sure you guys are going through the same thing. There does not seem to be a day that goes by without me getting a notification that one of my services, today it was Peacock, is going up in price.
Of course. Right?
And they never go up like a dollar.
No. Nope.
They're going up like $3 or $4 at a time. But this is something called Jolt. And what it says is that the film dives into the topic of anxiety, taking an up-close and often uncomfortable look on how it manifests, what it feels like in the body. That part, you know, they put that in italics, feels like, because I've said this to you guys before. It's a weird feeling that you get. It's like a sick feeling, if you will, with the anxiety. And I guess they do this all with the point of view of, you know, working comedians, which I think is kind of an interesting angle. I'm not sure exactly why they picked that, but they do. And they also, you know, talk about how some of this relates to the family, dating and marriage, et cetera. Then I also saw this, and I don't, you know, I never knew who this person was, but there might be some people listening right now who know she is, because she's a huge Instagram star, and her name is Alex Earle. And have you ever heard of Alex Earle? I think I might have even brought up her name before on the show. Sue, do you know who she is?
No.
Huge. I mean, she's got unbelievable amount of followers. She's actually, and this is how I know who she is, she's the niece of a friend of my wife's that my wife went to high school with.
Oh, okay.
Her name is Maureen, and Alex Earle is the niece, and she's just got gazillions of followers. But she also has a podcast. I've never listened to it before. But today, on my suggestions for August 27th, which I believe was yesterday, it says, Living with Anxiety, My Story and Tips, Hot Mess with Alex Earle. And if you go to the, and this is, I bring it up because this is another one of those proof positive things that this stuff is so relatable to other people. And I didn't know about her. I'm going to share this with my wife too, because my wife actually knows her. And it says on the, everything's the AI overview now. It's not Wikipedia.
Exactly. Right.
It's the AI overview. And it says that she was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder at age 14, has, and this is where it's relatable for me, has experienced severe physical symptoms like heart pounding. I describe it as like heart awareness. I can kind of feel my heartbeat, fainting, dry heaving. I never had that, along with daily anxiety that sometimes prevented her from leaving her bed or going to school. I'm raising my hand because I can certainly relate to that. And she says she manages it with breathing exercises. I was taught some breathing exercises, and I've
Do they help?
Used them. Yeah, you know, I think, I don't know, Fred. You know, because when I did the breathing exercises, and they kind of described in this article with the AI overview sort of the same way that I, you know, learned. And what she does is she breathes in for 4 seconds. She holds it for 5 to 6 seconds, and then you exhale for 6 seconds. So, and I was doing like 4 seconds in, pause, 4 seconds out. It was a psychologist who had taught me that. Now, I was doing that when I felt the worst, right? Like when I, and I don't think it helped very much when I felt that way. So, but it is something that I have done over the course of the last couple of months to, you know, kind of calm my brain down, especially at night when I'm, you know, all over the place and thinking about sleeping. Anyway, I just thought that those were two interesting angles to something that I have discussed. And again, I went into great detail about all this on Monica's podcast, and there are two big, look, I mean, that thing with Alex Earle will get a lot of attention just because of who she is with younger people. I think people under the age of 35 in particular know who she is. I've got some great, like, I can't even share the stories because when Maureen, my wife's friend, hangs out with the family, it's like a completely different dynamic. There's cameras everywhere because she's,
you know, she's constantly contenting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That her whole life is content. Uh-huh. Very good point there, Sue. All right, we got Sue's News coming up. Love Curtis Houck. He calls out the media nonsense on a regular basis. He's the managing editor of Newsbusters at the Media Research Center, and he has been all over some of the reaction to the Minneapolis shooting. Also, you know, there's reaction and then there's lack of reaction. And I always call this, you know, the journalism of omission, but there has not been a lot of media attention to our Maryland father friend, Abrego Garcia. So Curtis will weigh in on that in just a little bit. And we do have Chris Elston coming up, right, Fred?
Right, right.
Billboard Chris, who literally travels the world on, you know, preaching the gospel against gender-affirming care. He's been a hero in all of this. And his thoughts on the Minneapolis shooter, that's coming up a little bit later this hour as well. We got to do this, though, for a Thursday afternoon.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No, 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 no.
And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Fred has found out more about the car.
Okay, so it wasn't the dealership that crashed the car.
Oh, see, that's good news.
It was another customer.
I don't know if that's good news.
And the customer left their insurance information.
Okay, that's good news.
But well, Marie doesn't think we're going to need it.
Oh,
because
really?
Because the dealer said, leave it with us. We'll take care of it. We'll buff it out.
Oh, that's nice.
Just to go back to the previous hour, because we don't want to lose people here on this. So, your car was in at the dealer to get some work done, right?
Yeah. Well, to get it's just some, what do you call those? Recall. Recall notices.
The things that I always ignore. Yes,
yeah,
right.
Like
I'm aware.
Your trunk or something goofy like that.
And somebody hit it, but it turns out it was just someone else, and they'll buff it out. That's good. That means they didn't hit it that hard.
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay. Well, that's good. I'm trying to figure out how to reset the code on the garage door of the new house, because they left me instructions and I couldn't get it to work. And I think I'm going to go to YouTube, and I think YouTube will tell me. But I think I have to get up on the ladder. Maybe he will and touch something.
I did that I did that over the weekend in our garage because we got a new garage door opener.
How do you do
it? I couldn't do it. I follow the YouTube advice.
Yes.
I think they say, you know, the bottom line is you don't have strong enough Wi-Fi.
Oh,
but we always
Wi-Fi?
Did.
Oh, jeez. So, I don't think I have that kind of fancy stuff. I don't think Wi-Fi is involved.
I don't know. Ugh. I think it was to hook it up to your phone.
Oh,
that's what we were trying to do. But I had to go up on the ladder to the top of the garage.
Yeah, it's a fair frustrating process. It really is.
Yeah.
Like, whenever my wife seems to get a new car every 2 years for a variety of reasons, wrecking them, et cetera. But, like, on my car, I only figured out how to program having both of them go up and down at the same time.
Oh.
So if I want to, well, actually, that's not true. I can open the left side of the garage door with one button,
uh-huh.
okay? But I never have figured out how to just open up the right side with one button. So I have two buttons. One, either open or close the left side, the bigger door.
Right.
And then the other option is close them and open them at the same time. So it's a bit of a dancing act when I get home. And by the way, sometimes Becky has the hatch open and I start to close the big door so I can hit the button that does both of them. And I'm like, no, don't
panic.
Do that. So, but I empathize with this because I've been out there with, you know, pressing the buttons and doing the thing and looking at the YouTube videos. And then I take, you know, the regular,
right.
There's another way to do it where you have the regular old fashioned garage door opener. And you hold it next
that's
to...
That's right, that's right.
But you'd think it would be easier by now,
yes,
right?
Yes, I really do. And I want a code so I can hit that when I don't have the key, and I can't. I'll go into it this weekend. Today is National Thoughtful Day. Isn't that nice?
It is.
And National Bowtie Day. Do you either of you have a bowtie?
I
could
see Fred a bowtie.
I could too.
No.
No?
No, I don't have a bowtie.
I could see you in that too.
I've only worn them with tuxedos.
Who wears bow ties anymore?
John Pertzborn.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, he does.
Yeah.
The sports guy on Fox. I can't think of his name.
Okay.
Oh, I definitely
because he's every time he's on, he's a really popular baseball guy.
Huh.
And he always, you know, his every game a bow tie has a new sponsor.
Oh, that's smart.
Know, yeah.
You hear that, Mark? You could roll that into a sponsor.
Right, exactly.
All right, on this day in history, 118 years ago, I love this stuff. In 1907, two Seattle teenagers thought, you know what? Let's just start a delivery service. We need a little extra money. And they called it American Messenger Company. Today, Jim Casey and Claude Ryan's little company is known as UPS. Started by two Seattle teenagers 118 years ago. Yeah.
That's kind of amazing.
It is
now,
amazing.
But do you have any information? Like, how long did they hold on to it?
No.
And did they become very wealthy because of it, or did they sell
Suze
it
News
early?
News has dropped the ball on that, but you can Google it and find out.
Very curious, though.
And on this day in history, we got a little music, because, you know, I got to have music. That's a hint for you, Mark.
Is the guy at Channel 5, Ben Rosenthal? No, because I'm cross-referencing other parts of the show. The guy that wears the bow tie?
No.
That's not him? Ben Rosenthal?
No.
No. Well, that's what...
You'll know what it's...
Well, okay, why you mumble about that? Would you hit the music for me?
You know what? I think I'm supposed to hit some music
right now
for Suze News. Why don't we do that?
On this day in history, 60 years ago, the Beach Boys.
Well, East Coast girls are hip. I really dig those styles they wear. And the
Brian Wilson just passed away. Two, 3 months ago?
Well, I bring this one up because I thought for sure this would have hit number one, and I do love the Beach Boys. Okay, who is it? Where's the bow ties?
Ken Rosenthal.
Ken Rosenthal.
Okay.
He said Ben Rosenthal. That's why. Yeah.
Oh.
Ken Rosenthal is the national guy. He's a national. I thought
he meant
a local guy.
Oh,
sorry,
no.
I misunderstood.
No,
that.
He said national.
But back to the Beach Boys.
I forgot my
We're
point.
Everywhere.
Oh, yes. California Girls. I thought, yes. That made it to number one. No, it only made it to number three. So this day in history, California Girls peaked at number three. Now, I should have gone to look up what hit number one that week, but Suze News has failed again.
Suze News is not
going deep
into the stories.
I just want to say this to you. It's early. It's very early when I write this. And on this day in history, 53 years ago, in 1972, in that Speedo, Mark Spitz won the 200-meter butterfly at the Summer Olympics in Munich. He would go on to win 7 gold medals at that Olympiad alone and set world records in all 7. He was our 1972, Michael Phelps.
Yeah.
These were, you know, 7 years old in 1972. These are my first Olympic memories.
Yes.
Of Mark Spitz.
And that, right? the red, white, and blue Speedo, I remember that.
By the way.
Yeah.
I've dug into the AI overview. Oh. It didn't take much to get this, so you could have done it.
Yeah.
California Girls, number three. Like a Rolling Stone was number two. By Bob Dylan, and Help by the Beatles. Never heard of that band, but apparently they had a number one back then.
You know,
AI overview. They should just call it AI guesstimate.
Yeah.
Because you never really know if it's right or not.
Well, you don't. We learned that yesterday in Sue's News, which did teach us something. Okay. I don't remember the story when it happened. Okay, but Delta Airlines in 2020... apparently, sorry, crowd.
Oh, crowd didn't like that.
Did a fuel dump from one of its planes when it was flying over L.A., and it just doused schools, playgrounds, houses with jet fuel because it wasn't very high. Like tens of thousands of properties.
No.
And this has been a legal battle for years. And Delta has finally agreed to pay about $79 million for doing it. Now, the plane was headed for Shanghai, and it wasn't at a high altitude yet. And Delta contended that they said, listen, the pilots followed regulations, and then they did soil tests in L.A. to show that there wasn't contamination. I just find it interesting. But yesterday they said, all right, fine. Because you should have been higher. That's what everybody else says.
The altitude.
Yeah.
Yep.
So... people were walking down the street and got hit with some gas. The kids did, and they tested. The kids were fine, but it was that low. So
who gets the money?
The lawyers. And then they split it between tens of thousands of people. And I think they said the average person would get $889.
Oh, well, that's not bad.
Yeah, that's not terrible. All right, police in California.
At the time, right? I mean, seriously, how did that happen with no fire starting?
That is a good question. Fred found this story, and since we did Kohl's yesterday, I thought we'd do this today. You know, I love when they catch a criminal. Police in Southern California have busted a ring that stole $10 million in merchandise from Home Depot stores. Now, I'm talking about 600 thefts that occurred over several years at 71 Home Depot stores. Now, this is the largest organized retail theft case uncovered in Home Depot history, by the way. And Ventura County Sheriff James Fryoff says the alleged ringleader, whose name is David All, owned a wholesale store and has his own employees go into Home Depots and shoplift items and then bring them back to his warehouse. And he would sell them.
Wow.
And they would focus on expensive electrical components like breakers, dimmers, switches, and outlets. And then 14 suspects were rounded up when they finally arrested everybody.
Well, you might remember one of my favorite things to do, and I haven't done this in a while, is if I'm at Lowe's and I have to go to the back of Lowe's to use the restroom because my, you know, bladder control has been well documented on this show.
Yes.
They have a list. The employee, you know, room is back there, the break room or whatever, and they post a list of the top 10 items that have been shoplifted from Lowe's. And it is stunning because sometimes it's like a nail gun that's worth a couple hundred dollars.
Yes.
Sometimes it's smaller items, but they list the item and then they list how many walked out the door.
Ooh.
And then they list how much they cost. And I'll have to do that again. I got to come up with a reason to go to Lowe's and take
always
a picture.
A reason.
There were some big things, though, you had before, like generators and barbecue pits.
Things that were worth $800. Yeah. Well, so you can see, because, again, these people who work at these stores, they're limited at what they can actually do. I mean, I'm pretty sure you can walk out of these stores, and if someone says, hey, I need to see that, you just keep walking. There's not going to be consequences, and they kind of know that.
Yeah, it's terrible. And they have to have those huge doors so that real people who are buying stuff can get it out. So, yeah, I just think it's not good, but I'm glad they got them. 14 people. Here's how I'm going to run my business. I'm going to have 14 people steal, and then I'm going to resell it.
Hey, it worked for a while.
I don't give them credit
there.
Okay. And finally, in Sue's News, we do have today's random fact. The average cloud weighs 1.1 million pounds. Now, I'm talking about a cloud in the sky.
Really?
What?
But the weight is distributed across such a big space that it still floats.
Okay, okay. How'd they measure it?
Yeah. I have no idea, and Fred.
This is another one of those that makes your brain hurt,
right?
This
is a DYI. Go in on this one.
Crazy stuff from Sue's News. But you can hear something again along those lines tomorrow afternoon, same time, same place, here on 97.1 FM Talk. Hang in there. So, I mean, immediately after this shooting story broke yesterday, Jen Psaki, former White House press secretary, who, of course, hosts the show on MSNBC. I'm sorry, MS Now. Ooh, I'm going to catch myself on that. Posted on X that prayers does not end school shootings. Prayers do not make parents feel safe sending their kids to school. Prayer does not bring these kids back. Enough with the thoughts and prayers. So Caroline Leavitt actually addressed that today at the briefing.
I saw the comments of my predecessor, Ms. Psaki, and frankly, I think they're incredibly insensitive and disrespectful to the tens of millions of Americans of faith across this country who believe in the power of prayer, who believe that prayer works, and who believe that in a time of mourning like this, when beautiful young children were killed while praying in a church, it's utterly disrespectful to deride the power of prayer in this country. And it's disrespectful to the millions of Americans of faith. And I would encourage Ms. Psaki to pray for these families themselves who need it right now more than ever.
Curtis Houck is back with us. He's a managing editor of Newsbusters at the Media Research Center. I know that you highlighted that particular media episode amongst several others in the last 24 hours that have been interesting. How are you, Curtis?
Doing all right, Mark. What in the world is going on?
I would say the same thing because, look, and you know this, with angles of these particular stories, you have some media outlets that just refer or refuse to refer to some things. Like, here's Jake Tapper talking about the trans angle. This is the best he could do.
Another piece of the puzzle as to who the shooter was. The Minneapolis Star Tribune says, according to court records, because there's been some confusion about what the shooter's name was.
Yes.
That Robin Westman's mother applied to change her child's name in 2019. It was, at one point, Robert Paul Westman.
Correct.
But since she identifies as a female and wants her name to reflect that identification, was underage, it's now Robin.
Yeah, just make sure, Curtis, that we get the pronouns correct. That's all we're interested in here at CNN.
Yeah, my mistake, you know. I mean, it's all of our mistakes here. My colleague Bill D'Agostino has a new supercut hot off the press on his X feed. He should be having a story coming up here shortly at Newsbusters where he kind of goes through this and noting how they kind of trip over themselves. CNN and MSNBC and the like have been doing this since yesterday morning, doing the shooter, the assailant, the perpetrator. You know, they either engage in the pronoun game or they kind of fumble the bag. I said also today that this shooting in general is the left's worst nightmare when it comes to covering mass shootings because it touches the electrified third rail of transgenderism. Like, in terms of, like, progressive hard left hierarchy, you wonder, like, okay, is race or, like, gender or, like, even, like, foreign policy, Hamas, like, you have all these groups of people that, like, thou shalt not, like, cross. And I think transgenderism is the one that, like, the left, by and large, isn't looking to cross because they're so militant and so unforgiving. And so this is the situation that we found ourselves in with Jake Tapper playing this mealy mouth game, people being kind of mamby-pamby about motive we may never know. This feels like a throwback to, like, the radical Islamic terror days when they're saying, oh, we don't really know what their motive was because they shouted Allahu Akbar.
Yeah, no, exactly. By the way, you have to guide me into, you said it was Bill D'Agostino, right?
So
it's Banned Bill, but when I do Banned Bill on my feed here, it comes up like his last post was a long time ago. Maybe I'm just not looking at the right thing here.
Yeah, Banned underscore Bill. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, here it is. Okay. Yeah, because I'm gonna have to pull some of that audio. I appreciate you guiding me into this. It is interesting, though, because they, you know, the New York Times goes ahead and calls, and I'm not saying the name of the shooter, but it's Ms. and it's her. They don't even try to hide the fact that, look, if you listen to the creepy video that was pulled down by YouTube before other people grabbed it, it's clearly a man that is doing the narration of all the nutty, goofy stuff, right?
I don't think anybody should be under that assumption. In the new reporting from the New York Post shows that a journal showed some regret, actually, about being in this position, that I should never have done this, which goes to the point that Mary Margaret Olihan wrote about in her book, the great Daily Wire reporter wrote about detransitioning, people who have realized that they made the greatest mistake of their entire lives, and how much it only prolongs their misery. The left, just like they're not they're avoiding the motive here, Mark. So many of them are refusing to, and I'm so glad you expressed interest in having me on today, because you're the one person I can say this on the air. They're not, again, willing to talk about the mental health crisis right in this country. We have too many therapists in this country that are willing to affirm someone's struggles, suggest that, no, you don't need to change anything. Everyone needs to change for you, you know, that you can play God with your biology. You play God with your life. And that is just, it is so destructive. And yet again, just like we saw at the Covenant School in Nashville and a few other high profile incidents over the last few years, that confusion and general unhappiness with the world leads to anti-Christian, anti-Trump, whatever hate in one way or another.
It's my understanding that this dude even kind of, maybe in a roundabout way, outed some of this nonsense himself, because in the manifesto, he refers to the fact that he was tired of being trans and wished he, quote, never brainwashed himself, writing, yep, "I can't cut my hair now as it would be embarrassing defeat. I will probably chop it on the day of the attack." And I don't really care if he did that or if he didn't do that. But I mean, there's a self-realization that this stuff is wacky, I think, even by this dude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that the parents went along with this, that court records show the parents went along with this delusion and signed off on his name change a few years ago in a Minnesota courthouse, where, you know, you think about the lieutenant governor of Minnesota who wore a short about protect trans kids and it had a knife on it, suggesting that there was a level of militancy, you know, when it comes to protecting trans minors, you know, and this is the debate you have in a lot of blue states and blue cities about paying for this kind of thing. And in Colorado, ADF pointed out, Alliance Defending Freedom noted to Will Kane a few weeks ago, that in Colorado, they want to try to make it criminal if you don't even use the right pronouns for someone. If you misgender them, you as a business owner could be in all kinds of trouble. So this grand delusion is now having deadly consequences, and the media are giving away the game, as we started this segment, by going he, which kind of is an inadvertent concession, admission, that this is all a joke to begin with.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, and I've even said this about some of the Washington Post coverage. I saw this story a couple of weeks ago about this. I referred to this earlier about this poor, you know, family that was in, I don't know if it was Montana, the North Dakotas. They had to move out because of the bathroom bill and their trans kid couldn't use, you know, the bathroom, and they felt unsafe. Yeah, it was the bookstore that they owned. Right. So, and you know, here's what I say about stuff like that. That's fair. You want to do that story, do that story. But where have they, and by the way, they've done it a couple of times, but it was several years ago, but they do not make any effort to put the pretty crazy stories of the detransitioners and the people that felt that they were brainwashed and have gone through things that, you know, will never come back to their bodies because they've changed them permanently. There are an ample amount of those stories that never get amplified in the New York Times, the LA Times. You know, they did it a few years ago. There was a time where the New York Times and the Washington Post both had kind of competing different opinion pieces by people who were supporting detransitioning. But I've never seen anything like that since.
Yeah. And then it's not a matter of privacy. You know, there are people that want to talk. There are people that are willing to sit for interviews. I mean, Mary Margaret's book is filled with public interviews with people providing their names to this, that speak on the Hill at events. So it's not a matter as if these people don't exist or a lot of them just want to be private and not talk about it on social media or in interviews. They exist. This then goes to the Kermit Gosnell situation, which I refer back to because at the time, a lot of the national media dismissed it, including the Washington Post, dismissed it as a local crime story. It's an anecdote, you know, just like migrant crime stories. These are anecdotes. They're not symbols of a wider issue. But here in this case, we have a pattern of behavior in which this, by some accounts, you're starting to push maybe 10 plus incidents where someone who was confused about which gender they were going out and committing mass murder because they felt that their lives had fallen apart. And we don't want to go down this road about why these groups of people ended up in this instance because, well, you know, these are just individuals. Stories and there's different circumstances, and while that's true, that can't be an excuse for not talking about
it. Yeah, it's ridiculous, and you know, it'd be very interesting to see how this unfolds. Even going into some of the stuff and the details of the manifesto and that creepy audio, there has not been, not that we should give this guy attention, but I do think there's valid information that has not been reported by the legacy media. Curtis, always great to hook you up with you. I appreciate it. I got Billboard Chris. I know you know who Chris Elston is. He's coming up next to talk about a different angle of this as well, but you have a great holiday weekend.
Conservative.
One of my favorite contributors over at hotair.com is David Strom. He's going to join us after the top of the hour. He is in Minneapolis, so a lot to say on what's going on up there. Chris Elston is back with us. He is known on the X, formerly Twitter, as Billboard Chris. He's been a hero on some of this gender-affirming care nonsense that's been going around the country, including, you know, our effort here to close down, which was successful, the clinic at Children's Hospital in WashU, thanks to Jamie Reed. Chris, welcome back. It's been a little bit since I've spoken with you. How are you? Are you at home in Canada or somewhere else on the planet?
I am at home right now, but I'm heading off to London tomorrow, and I'm going to be there for a little while and doing a tour of UK and Ireland.
I figured you might be hitting the road because that is what you do. There is a bit of a trans connection with this shooter in Minneapolis. So what would you say about all this that's being undercovered by the media right now?
Yes. So these are mentally ill people, right? You don't try to change your sex and go on the opposite sex's hormones and cut off body parts if you're thriving in life mentally. And instead of getting the help they need, they're being harmed. So who knows what else is going on in this man's life? But the way that they are treated is though they have some special and unique and very brave identity. They are simultaneously given drugs and hormones which don't belong in their body while being propagandized that the entire world is out to get them. So we shouldn't be surprised when they commit violence because they are in a violent cult where the entire left and the entire Democratic Party is encouraging them to commit violence. We have people like the Lieutenant Governor of Minnesota wearing a shirt that says protect trans kids with a blade on it. So what message are they trying to send?
Well, I think that's an excellent question. It really is. And what you just said there in the last, you know, minute and a half should really be the focus of a story, let's say maybe this Sunday in the New York Times or the Washington Post, because it's a legitimate news topic. And of course they won't do that. And no one will touch it. They're being so careful. You have the New York Times referring to him as a her. I have a montage I'll play a little bit later of folks on CNN and MSNBC kind of stumbling over the he, her, because they want to make sure they get the pronouns right, Chris. That's the most important part of this story.
Right. And what are we doing when we call a man by female pronouns? We're giving legitimacy to a terrible movement teaching children that they are born wrong, that they're born in the wrong bodies, that they're supposed to be something they're not. They call this gender affirming care. What is that affirming? It's affirming that there's something wrong with the child, that they are structurally broken and that they need to change themselves. This young man, this shooter, this murderer, by the way, expressed regret for having transitioned.
Yeah, that's what's interesting. Like said, he even sort of self-acknowledged that he was brainwashed, right?
Absolutely. And I know you've had Jamie Reed on your program many times. She's been in the news a little last day talking about this. She's a whistleblower from the gender clinic at Washington University who oversaw 1,000 of these cases. And it's not really helping any of them. Of course it's not. They all have different psychiatric disorders. We know from gender clinic statistics, like in the UK, that 70% of the children had five or more coexisting mental health comorbidities, autism, trauma, sexual abuse, mothers with borderline personality. Themselves, they have BPD. They have all sorts of issues going on, and they're not being treated. Instead, they're being told, yes, the source of all your problems is your gender identity, and we're going to fix that up by making you appear to be the opposite sex. That doesn't solve anything.
I have mentioned, I'm glad you brought up Jamie, because I've brought it up with several guests in the last couple of days, and one of the things that really jumps out to me in that original report, the whistleblower report, was her focus and concern about the mental health issues related to these young kids that were completely being glossed over. And the automatic go-to was, let's put them on puberty blockers. Let's give them this medication. Let's do this. And it was never the attention. And one of the guys I think she highlighted was either fantasizing or actually having sex with dogs. And that should have been a tip off
right
from the beginning. But apparently it wasn't. They were more concerned about whether he or she should be a they, them, or something along those lines. Now, you do have some, there's some victories out there that keep happening, you know, I think around the country when it comes to some of this stuff. And, you know, Jamie helped a lot of that. It was a bit of a ground zero, as I've referred to it here in St. Louis. WashU closes that center down. A lot of other clinics have followed suit. There was a story that I saw today that the University of Michigan Medical Center became the latest to drop trans services for minors among the pressure from Trump. But then there's a story that I saw from Leo Sapir. And Leo wrote that the AMA, the American Medical Association, is still supporting this gender-affirming care thing. And they've passed a resolution promising to protect these procedures. So the rest of the world has kind of come around on this. You've exposed it. Jamie's exposed it. I've done my best in exposing it. And the American Medical Association still isn't on board, Chris.
Yeah, they're the most powerful medical lobbying organization in the United States. They have the most doctors in the organization, and they have a new president. And this new president was on a Zoom call with Ethan Hame, who was a whistleblower from Texas. He's a young doctor that blew the whistle on how Texas was ignoring the ban and they were continuing to harm kids. And there was a member of the state house in Michigan, one of the Republicans, on this call recording it. And Dr. Hame started to talk about how these drugs, when given to children at 10 or stage 2, the beginning of puberty, they sterilize these kids. And what did the new president of the American Medical Association do? He made a movement with his hand up and down as though Dr. Hame was just mouthing irrelevant words, and he tried to move it on.
Oh my gosh.
He's doing anything he can to ignore the truth. He knows nothing about this himself. He then asked this state representative to talk to a brand new doctor called Dr. Krikorian, who is a woman identifying as a man. And they recorded these 2-hour-long interviews. This doctor, who was recommended by the president of the AMA to discuss this with the politician, didn't even know the systematic reviews that had been done on this issue by Finland, Sweden, UK, or the United States. Totally discredits them and only brought up individual studies that have already been widely debunked. So these people are not interested in the truth. We need to stop treating them as though they are. These people are enemies of our kids, and we need to discredit them fully and talk to the real doctors, like ones at the American College of Pediatricians, who are also blowing the whistle.
That what you just shared there is just stunning. It really, especially at this point in this conversation, you would think, and you've been at this for a while now, and I've been talking about this for a while, and it's almost been 3 years since Jamie's report, you would think that there would be more of these medical professionals that would be on board, but they're so woke and so brainwashed themselves, they can't bring themselves to do it.
The president of the AMA said the suicide rate is between 50 and 70% for trans-identified people. They weaponize suicide all the time. It's the only thing they go to, because the only way you can justify this abuse, this child abuse, is to say that kids are going to die if you don't do it. But the actual suicide rate, we know from studies in Finland that the actual suicide rate was 0.052% over 24 years at their gender clinic with more than 2,000 kids. There were 7 suicides. It was slightly higher than a sample group of about 17,000 people, but the common denominator was other psychiatric comorbidity.
Yeah. And by the way, the higher suicide rate is not with kids and children that are transitioning. It's with the adults that have already transitioned and still have the mental health issues. And that's a little hidden secret in those figures. Billboard Chris Elston, always great to have you on, Chris. You have a great trip overseas. Do your work, and God bless you. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Get more at 971talk.com.
No matter why your clients give, their donations can do so much more with a donor-advised fund from DAF Giving 360. They can donate cash, publicly traded securities, or other non-cash assets like real estate and even crypto, while recommending grants at any time. DAF Giving 360 can offer you over 25 years of expertise, bringing donors, financial advisors, and charities together to make a greater impact. Learn more at dafgiving360.org/advisors.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection. Because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today. And live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.